Hi, I'm John Weber, and my guest on Piano Jazz today is composer, recording artist, band leader, educator, Grammy Award winner, trumpet master of multiple genres, and indisputably one of the greatest jazz musicians in the world. Brian Lynch, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here.
Oh, man. Oh, I forgot Jazz Messenger.
That's right. Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers.
Art Blakey. Following in the footsteps of Kenny Dorham, Donald Byrd.
Freddie Hubbard, Woody Shaw.
Art Farmer.
Wynton Marsalis.
Bill Hardman.
Terrence Blanchard.
Charles Tolliver.
Right. Randy Brecker for a minute.
Chuck Mangione for a minute.
That's right.
And Philip Harper, I think.
Yeah. Clifford Brown.
Clifford.
Lee Morgan.
Lee Mogi.
Yeah.
Now that's a pretty special club, Brian.
It's a good club to be in. I was looking to do that for a real long time. So, you know, I was a little long in the tooth by the time I got into the Messengers in my 30s. But, I saved up my, my intellectual and emotional capital to get into that group. And it was the culmination of a really lifelong dream.
Yeah, well, he loved your composing so much. I know that he delegated much of the composition duties to you and the band. And
he used to tell me that he was looking at one of my tunes, before a record date, and so I played it for him from the rehearsal. He wasn't at the rehearsal, and his comment was, "Too many notes. Reminds me of Fletcher Henderson." So okay, we'll do it. At least it's different.
Now, why is it whenever we do an impersonation of a venerable jazz leader, it's always with a kind of a raspy?
With Art Blakey, especially that's what's going on there. And of course, there's a whole, you know, all the Messengers kind of share this. It's sort of like being a Mason, you know.
Do you feel a sort of fraternal kinship with all the other erstwhile Messengers?
Absolutely, and there's this amazing shared body of knowledge. And even if we never played in the band together, or even in some cases never even played together or met each other until years later, we still can go right away and into this amazing shared body of knowledge.
Yeah. I would like to hear one of your compositions, actually. Let's get right into it, man.
Okay, since we were talking about Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, and also thinking about from that whole era, Horace Silver, who was another one of my idols and who I had the pleasure of playing with a little bit earlier in my career. You could say I think the three trumpet players that I can think of that played with both bands on a regular basis were Donald Byrd, Woody Shaw, and myself.
Yeah.
And so we'd like to do something for Woody Shaw right now, and this is an original composition, as you mentioned. I think it's original.
Yeah, well, what's...
As much as anything's original out here. It's called Woody Shaw.
Oh, right.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
Thank you.
Yeah, man, Woody Shaw.
He was something else.
And you have played for Woody Shaw.
Yeah, you know, when I was 18, I went and I had a lot of temerity back in those days, which is a fancy way of saying I you know, had more guts than sense, right, or brains. And I went and sat in with there's a great jazz club in New York in the 70s called Boomers. And, you know, that was like kind of where the elite of the elite would hang out, at least in terms of what I thought was the elite, people like Cedar Walton and George Coleman and so on and so forth. So I somehow finagled myself up in the bandstand with George Coleman, and they were playing Stella by Starlight, like at about, you know, quarter note equals 300. And Coleman came up and said, well, if you want to play, now's the time. And so I came up there and, you know, my knees were knocking together on 2 and 4. I was so scared. And so I had my eyes closed. And when I opened my eyes, Woody Shaw was standing like a foot in front of me, just like staring at me, you know. I mean, you know, he couldn't see too well. So yeah, I'm sure he's just like, you know, what is this? And like, you know, they had to see for himself. And it was intimidating, shattering, but quite motivating at the same time.
And
he is such a hero.
You know, at that age, I think a lot of musicians are about speed and technique and everything, which you had plenty of that. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have seen you perform about 10 years before your Messenger detail, okay? Having grown up in the same town, Milwaukee,
right.
My earliest memory of you, I'm 17 or so, I can remember just what a gigantic musical presence you had on stage. To me, you sounded like Clifford Brown. I didn't know that many jazz trumpet players. I thought, he sounds like, your melodicism was like Clifford Brown's, but I thought, Clifford Brown plays kind of staccato compared to Brian. Every note was logically connected to the note before and the note after, and it's this wonderful.
Well, that's what you're trying. That's what you're trying for, and trying to make it come out in the right place at the right time. You know, and I've always been a devotee of I guess you could say tradition's one word, but lineage, I think, is another operative word, you know. I mean, of course, being in aspiring to and then being able to be in the groups of people like Horace Silver and Art Blakey, you're very conscious of, you know, being in a lineage. And so I don't think that you should play music and not be aware of the tradition that produced it, the tradition that really produced you, so to speak, if you play within it. And I think it's something that you should really always, that should be part of your equipment to play music, is an awareness of tradition and culture, the culture of jazz music. Who made jazz music? Who are the figures? Who are the major figures? Who are the minor figures? So I've always been interested so much in a lot of those players, you know, like, I don't know, you know, Kenny Dorham or Blue Mitchell for that app.
Kenny Dorham, matter. Blue, yeah. Mitchell, yeah. Love. Yeah, I love your tune about Blue Mitchell, Tribute to Blue, which does remind me of Blue Mitchell without being an impersonation of Blue Mitchell. It's like you really got his soul, and I love it. It's in D major, and I think we ought to play it.
Let's do it.
Yeah. 1, 2, 1, 2. Yeah, it's Tribute to Blue. Nice tune, Brian.
Thank you.
If I could remember all the changes, which are cool. And it is a totally a Blue Mitchell song, man.
Yeah, I think it has a little bit of that feeling.
Well, there's more coming up with trumpeter Brian Lynch. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm John Weber, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. I want to ask you about your move to San Diego in 1980. I think, folks go?
My parents had moved out there, and things had gotten a little bit lean, so to speak, in Milwaukee, which is, typical of most music scenes. New York is very atypical that everything's happening all the time. I mean, that's why we move here, right? But I was lucky to kind of fall into another town which was having another cyclical music scene, but they're on the upswing with their cycle. So there was a lot of work, a lot of great players. I made a lot of very enduring musical relationships and from that experience of living there for about a year off and on. But it was great training for moving to New York, because breaking into a new scene that wasn't quite as daunting as New York, it's kind of like going out to the minor leagues before going to the major leagues.
Yeah. Now, okay, you went to San Diego and then you went to New York. You probably made a ton of contacts in New York, and I periodically see you in Milwaukee around this time.
Yeah, I was still spending some time there. Yeah.
And the word on the street was, hey, hear about Brian? You got a gig with Toshiko, man. Toshiko Akiyoshi was just this name that I'd read on big band charts, complex beyond belief. And then, that wasn't enough, okay? Another great pianist composer, little did we know, you're about to pick up another long-term gig with one of the piano legends. And tell me how you hooked up with Horace Silver in 1982.
He invited me out to L.A. to audition. And so his auditions are like four trumpet players with his working band's rhythm section. And the trumpet players were really fine trumpeter and saxophone player, lives in Seattle, Jay Thomas, and Clay Jenkins, who teaches up at Eastman, and Tim Higgins, those were the other three trumpet players. So I was like, wow, well, I'm in trouble. I still have to say that the one of the biggest thrills I ever got in my life was when I was staying at a friend of mine's house, and phone rings, and you get on the phone and said, Brian, it's Horace Silver. You got the gig, man. Just like that, as dramatic as that. It was like,
Man.
Yeah.
I do want to play something. While we were talking about Horace, which was, that was a big 3 years of your life. And I'm trying to think of just maybe another trumpet player tribute. And I'm trying to, who have we omitted?
Well, thinking about that era, so coming right out of that era was when I did my first album as a leader. And then around that time, I did a fairly elaborate, I guess you'd call it, demo tape. And I was short a song going out the door to the recording session at Rudy Van Gelder's. And I said, I got to write something. I need a blues. And I sat down and wrote this in 10 minutes. And it seems like it's become one of my most enduring things. I mean, a lot of people have actually covered this tune. Dave Strikers, the great guitarist, has played it. We've recorded it with Phil Woods' band. I've recorded myself, of course, and I named it for, another one of the big parts of the trumpet lineage, the great Lee Morgan.
Yeah.
And Lee Morgan's nickname was Mogi, so this is called One for Mogi.
Let's do it.
One, two, three, one. Thank you.
Hey, Brian, nice tune, man. One for Mogi. I love it.
Thank you. Not bad for 10 minutes, right?
10 minutes. Well, I learned it in about 10 minutes, so we're even. How do you like that? Well, I'm having a great time with trumpeter Brian Lynch. You can find artist information, set lists, and more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. I'm John Weber, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. Yeah, Brian, you know, when you weren't on the road with Horace or Toshiko, you were building a tremendous reputation with some of the premier Latin bands in New York as if you weren't busy enough. Tell me about your experience with meeting some of the great, great Latin players in New York.
You know, I was first exposed to, I guess, what we call Latin music, though. I'm not sure if they listened to it in ancient Rome, but...
or salsa. They put salsa on it.
What could maybe be more accurately characterized as Afro-Caribbean music.
Afro-Caribbean, that is correct.
Or, you know, derivation is, you know, from Afro-Cuban music. But I'd been exposed to it back in my Milwaukee days playing with a group called La Chaz.
Tony Ramos.
Yeah, Tony Ramos, who I just saw the other night. And he had written out a lot of the music from the great bands, you know, people like, you know, Tito Puente Machito, Ray Barreto, so Eddie Palmieri, and so on and so forth. So I got exposed to that music for the first time through him. So I had a little bit of, you know, prior training when I got to New York, because for a trumpet player, especially at that time, that was a big part of the working scene, was to play in, we'll use the conventionalized term, Latin bands. So I was recommended to play with different bands. And the first, I would say, the really good band that I played with was led by a singer, a gentleman named Angel Canales. And I did some recording with him and some gigging. And then at a certain point, that group kind of broke up. And then a lot of us in that band went over to a reformed group of the great singer Hector Lavoe. And that was a big part of my gigging scene for a number of years. I was with him for about 4 or 5 years. So I was doing those gigs at the same time I was playing with Toshiko and Horace Silver. I was playing more often in town with Hector's band, maybe playing three nights a week in New York at a place like the legendary Corso Club, or, you know, going on trips to like Latin America or, you know, all over the United States. So I feel like it's been a blessing for me that I've always had an interest in different kinds of music. But in the case of Afro-Caribbean music and what we call jazz, you know, North American jazz, I always felt like there are two different rooms in the same house, to kind of borrow Dizzy Gillespie's expression. And you know, I mean, if you're listening to Horace Silver's music, you're hearing that Latin influence. If you're listening to, you know, McCoy Tyner or, you know, so on and so forth down the line, there's a big commonality between jazz and Afro-Caribbean music. Both mutually influence each other. There's been a Caribbean influence on jazz from the very beginning. New Orleans is not a Caribbean city. It's on the Gulf of Mexico, but it certainly has had that influence between New Orleans and Cuba facing each other and so on.
Lionel Belasco coming in from Trinidad as well about 1910.
Yeah. So all that stuff. This culminated really with my association with the great Eddie Palmieri, which I've been playing with for 23 years now. And so that's been a fantastic experience.
I want to hear one of your compositions, more recent compositions since you've worked with Eddie, in the Afro-Caribbean vernacular.
Okay. Well, I think we have something maybe we were looking at, and this is from the record that I betray my age, the CD that that he was so gracious to appear on in a very primary role with me, the Brian Lynch Eddie Palmieri Project record, which won a Grammy for Best Latin Jazz Recording in 2006. And the thing we're going to play is also has the marks of the participation of another great figure of Latin American music, contemporary, the singer Lila Downs, who wrote the lyrics and sang on the original recording of this.
And this is your music and Lila's lyrics?
Lila's lyrics. This is called Que Sería la Vida, which is What Would Life Be? With a question mark.
You multilingual man, let's do it.
One, two, three.
That's really a beautiful tune, Brian.
Thank you so much. You played it wonderfully.
Well, there's more music in just a minute with Brian Lynch. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. I'm John Weber, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. Brian, you must have played at some point with Dizzy Gillespie. I'm sure that you two have crossed paths somewhere.
I did share the stage with him, so to speak. He was guest at the Village Gate during the Salsa Meets Jazz series back in, I guess it would be the late 80s. And I was playing with a group of Latin jazz, Roland Vasquez, who's a wonderful composer and arranger. And I've also been in the company of both him and Art Blakey together when I was with the Messengers and in Europe and playing opposite his United Nations band. And it was, you know, you can imagine it's an incredible experience to see those titans together in the same space and time. I mean, the only thing that could compare with that was actually having Horace Silver sit in on Art Blakey's gig when I was playing with the band.
Wow.
Yeah, you can imagine that.
Wow.
Play with
both
of them together.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
so
man.
I wish that I could do a better job at being the sort of, you know, mentor that those people were to me. All I can say is I'm blessed to have been a part of it and to be, you know, have come up in that age.
I think you make a much bigger impact than you would ever imagine. So that being said, the reason I mentioned Dizzy is Marion had Dizzy as a guest on this show. And as he sat in studio as her guest playing some piano and playing some trumpet, she improvised a piece for him.
Hmm.
And it's just simply known as Portrait of Dizzy. And I'm gonna put you on the spot, and I'm gonna ask you to play it with me because I think it's a beautiful tune.
You got a chart on that?
I got a chart right.
Okay,
right here,
let me see what we
F
can
flat.
Do with this. Oh my goodness. Okay, I'll do my best.
Hey. Thank you. Yeah, Brian, nice navigating some.
Wow, there's something hip. Else there. She improvised that. Wow.
How hip is Marion?
It's beautiful.
Yeah, she's awesome, isn't she?
Great harmonic sense.
Oh, and how? You know, this show is so much fun, way too much fun. And
I know.
All good things must come to an end, man. But I would like to play one more tune. I think we have time for one more.
I'd love to. Maybe we should play a standard.
Okay.
Cole Porter.
Cole Porter. Okay. Cole Porter, name it.
So in Love?
Yeah. I love So in Love.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a hard one to sing, so we better do an instrumental version.
I think so.
See, hey.
I'm not going to sing it.
Ah.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Brian, thanks a million, man. You're too much.
Great.
Brian, thanks a million for being on Piano Jazz, man.
It's been my pleasure, John. Man, I had a ball.
You've been listening to Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz with guest host John Weber and his guest, trumpeter Brian Lynch. Piano Jazz is recorded at NOLA Studios in New York City and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Bill Moss, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Grant Jackson, executive producer Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. You can find more information about the artists and music selections heard on Piano Jazz or listen to a recent program on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. There you'll also find a link to our free weekly preview podcast, Piano Jazz Shorts.